Hello, welcome to True Hoop with me, Gerard Hector, and Coach David Thorpe. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Here we go.
Here we go. It was a nice sort of entryway, David, into the start of the season. Tuesday just gave us two games of early, 7 o'clock and then at 10 o'clock, just to get you ready because, watching a lot of games at once is a lot to get yourself back into. The players always talk about, we're finding our rhythm and getting back into it. Well, we have to get back into rhythm, too, of watching 8 million games at once. So two on the first night, 12 on night two to get you really primed and ready to go. Tonight, we go back to two. Thursday night, TNT doubleheader. And then we'll have a bunch on Friday and Saturday over the weekend. I want to start with the Nuggets and Lakers. It was a rematch of the Western Conference Finals. It was ring night for the Denver Nuggets. And teams on ring night tend to play poorly sometimes because, as David often says, human beings, when you're on top, natural inclination is to relax and feel good about life. Those rings, by the way, did you see them? Man. Oh, yeah. Oh my God. They're huge.
Did they say how much each one costs?
I don't recall. I'm sure they did. I just don't remember how much it
was. I'm curious now because one of my pledge brothers was a high ranking executive with the Red Sox when they won two different World Series rings. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. And he was on the financial side and he said they bought 500 rings. And he gave me the price. And so it wasn't as expensive as I thought. I mean, I've purchased some rings more expensive than that, but I have a feeling I misunderstood what he said because I don't think it was as cheap as what he made it out to be. But this was also years ago. It was like 50 when the Red Sox went last a while ago. Yeah. Cause that ring, like, what would you guess that ring cost?
How many years ago?
No. The ring is in Denver.
Anywhere between $50,000 and $100,000.
Right. So we are not talking about that number. So, okay. That makes sense to me. Yeah. That ring looked really impressive.
Oh, my God. I'm like,
and did you see Jokic staring at it? Like, it was like it was one of his next horses. Like, this thing? Like, or he was thinking, how many horses can I get for this? Yeah.
he goes back home to Sambor and he's like, I really like that horse. I don't want to use my own money. Would you like this championship ring?
On the subject, we haven't told this before, but on the subject of human nature, my son played for a really horrendous high school coach, like one of the worst coaches imaginable. We only were good because I'm just being honest. I brought in all my assistants, and we kind of ran everything, which was great because this guy had no interest in coaching anyway. He won his first ever district title in 30 years probably naturally. Because we coached the shit out of these guys. And then when he won, we beat an incredible team that had two Big Ten players at guard. After we won the district, now we're playing for the state. You're moving in the state playoffs. He gave our whole team like district championship shirts before the game. We're like,
what are you doing?
The season's not over yet. No, we celebrate after it's over. And naturally we got upset. Like, what the fuck? I think he wanted to be done. He got his one only district that'll ever win in his life. He's already been retired. And I just thought, you don't understand. Like, no, you got to keep him hungry. So that's why very often you don't win. There's also because the other team's really good too. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they played a really good Lakers team with a guy named LeBron James who looked pretty amazing in some parts anyway. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is how humans tend to go after. That's why you don't play a game right after a parade.
And then you're right. that's a guaranteed loss, I think.
Yeah, come on.
It was funny because AD at media day was talking a lot of talk. He was like, oh, the Nuggets, they talked a lot. We get it. Y'all won. But I was talking to LeBron and we said, oh man, we can't wait to play those guys. Every time it got asked, LeBron, do you have motivation now after what was said? He's like, I find my own motivation, but we circled it, whatever. All this, like, to me, it seemed kind of contrived. I was like, really? Is this what we're actually doing? Like, is there really like the Nuggets, trash talk is getting you guys motivated? Like, here's how I view all this stuff. If you win, you get to do all the talking you want. That's how the rules go. And so if somebody else beats your ass, then you can't say nothing because you got your ass beat. Like, that's how I always viewed it. So the Nuggets can talk all they want. And honestly, they really haven't talked. What actually happened was during the parade, they introduced Michael Malone as the Los Angeles Lakers daddy. Malone didn't say that. Whoever the freaking MC of the parade was said that.
Right.
And then it turned into a whole thing. By the way, did you hear the Nuggets crowd chanting, who's your daddy to the Lakers? That was quite nice.
I knew about none of these things you were saying. Nothing.
And I mean, no idea. And as you know, none of this stuff actually has any bearing on the players playing well or playing poorly. It's just extra fodder for, you know, for talking about the excitement and the atmosphere around the game. But I thought it was funny. But on the floor, you know, David, the Nuggets were champions for a reason, right? Because, as you said so eloquently in the chat, well, we know the Nuggets starters are better than the Lakers starters. They proved that last year, and they proved it again in that game, in that fourth quarter, when the game was still pretty close. The Nuggets ran five straight possessions where they scored 12 points and drew a foul. And I was like, well, that seems like the game to me. Like, these guys know what they're doing, and they have continuity. And you brought up an interesting stat earlier about how many teams have the same exact starting lineup as the last game they played last season. I know the Nuggets for sure is one. Don't know how many others have that.
Well, certainly of the contenders, I mean, Miami, you know, they lost important players. Mm-hmm. The Lakers had Westbrook for a long period of time, obviously, not at the end. The Denver just, you know, Denver looks like we thought they'd look. I'm concerned about mm-hmm. their bench. They have all season to figure it out. I do think that Mike Malone all summer could have been talking to his team about when Tim Duncan was in the league, you know, his Spurs were always right there and won five times, I think five. Mm-hmm. When LeBron was the world's best player, you know, blah, blah, blah. Steph Curry, Warriors, mm-hmm. look what happened. Well, we had the misfortune of Jamal Murray being hurt, but we've had the best player in the world now for three years. We've got one ring. He's in his prime. Like, guys, we should be winning championships. Now, we can't win them tomorrow. We don't play that game until June. Mm-hmm. In order to get there, our bench has to develop. We've got to develop more continuity from our second group. We've got to find ways to rest our starters with the second unit playing mm-hmm. so that they don't get worn down. But we should all be thinking, if we don't make it back to the finals and win, we have let ourselves down.
Yeah.
That should be infused into their bloodstream.
Yeah.
Like, we should be winning this championship again.
Yeah.
Because he's the best player in the world. No. And he's right. If he's doing that, he's right.
I think you're dead on there. And I think that's, I don't know this for sure, but that's got to be the mindset, right? Jokic is 28. He's in his prime. And he has a game, David, that I think, because of the way he plays, will age well.
Everyone always says that, Gerard, and I understand it. We should talk to Henry about this. Okay. Your point is, I'm sorry for interrupting
you. No, you're fine.
Your point, though, is he doesn't rely on athleticism.
Correct.
Okay.
Well, so, no, not the kind that everyone can recognize.
He's not jumping and all of that. Correct. Yeah. He is very nimble.
Correct.
One of my favorite writers in the country texted me this morning. She's probably trying to do an article on him, it sounds like to me.
Louisa Thomas.
Yeah, I gave her some advice on him before, and she was asking, like he seems to he move really well, and I said, yeah, he's quickness is speed in tight spaces. Mm-hmm. So he's not going to win a lot of 94-foot dashes, although he won one
at least
against AD. But he's very nimble. But what I have found is when players are just athletic enough, but super skilled and all of that, and they lose that step, they're in big trouble. There is a difference, though, with seven-footers.
Yes.
So he doesn't have to be so nimble at that size. The guards and wings, trouble. Real trouble. Shane Battier was out of the league fast. Mm-hmm. He couldn't move anymore. So, yes, Jokic, as long as he doesn't decide to just ride off in the sunset, which to me, if anyone's going to be like Jim Brown, it might be him, you know, mm-hmm. who retired in his prime in a sense. But there's no reason to think it's happening anytime soon.
No, I mean, he's on one Supermax extension right now. Maybe he does one more, and then he's like, all right, I'm out of here.
Or he feels like if they continue to want to pay me this kind of money, mm-hmm. man, I can buy a lot of horses. At some point, that'll stop. Yeah. At some point, you'll never make that same money again, ever.
Right.
And so make it when you can.
Yeah.
Right? Smoke when you got them.
No, I'm with you on that. You mentioned him beating AD at least once. And I think at least twice I saw that happen. You mentioned in our Substack chat, by the way, thank you to everyone who watched us on Substack. We'll do more of that again. Substack does know some of the issues that the chat had with the conversations not being chronological. I'm sure they will fix it. But it's something we'll do in the future. David, you said I can almost guarantee that Jokic and AD aren't in great shape yet. And I was like, well, clearly. And also, AD, like, I mean, Jokic beat you down the floor twice. Like, he just ran. It wasn't even like he just ran and you were walking or jogging. I was like, well, that's not a good sign to me for someone who LeBron said in the preseason, we need AD to be that guy. Not a great start if you're going to be that guy.
Yeah, first of all, you're right about all that. The conditioning thing is interesting. Teams, I think, are not great at getting guys in great shape. There's lots of reasons behind it that we don't have to waste our time with now. The season normally takes care of that. Remember, we think of the NBA games as practices because they don't practice a whole lot.
Correct.
So that's what the games are. But this is game one, so they haven't had that luxury, and preseason isn't the same thing for obvious reasons. So I think, and this is something I do with the players that I deal with, you got to get in shape on your own. I've got a couple of guys that are not in the rotation for their teams, and I've told them you cannot expect that your team will keep you in great shape because there's going to be a game coming up where someone's get hurt or foul trouble or whatever, and you're going to play 35 minutes. And if you suck because you're exhausted, you're back out of the rotation.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you've got to do the extra cardio, the VersaClimber, the bike, whatever, in addition to on-court stuff,
right,
so that you stay ready all season. This is what I'm telling them. There are players in the NBA that whose agents find them speed coaches and footwork coaches, at fitness guys, strength guys on their own. So AD looked out of shape to me. Jokic did too, actually. But it's for Jokic, I understand it a little bit more. AD, they should be hunting. They're not the hunted.
Correct.
But whatever, he'll probably be in shape very soon, I would think. But for now, they're not going to win many games where he scores no points after halftime.
Yeah, that was. Yeah. I was dumbfounded by that. 0 points in the second half. David, one team that we know takes training camp seriously and gets people ready is the Miami Heat. That's one thing. Yeah. Those guys are conditioned and in shape. I know that as a fact.
Although it did not help them almost blow a big lead to Detroit. Kate Cunningham, I don't think that's even on your thing.
Yeah, 30.
Kate was good. Mm-hmm. Kate was good. I watched the game. Miami just stopped competing, more or less. They stopped really fighting for good shots, but they're going to be fine.
You know what I wonder about that? So maybe the reason why the Lakers didn't, we don't know this for sure, but we're just assuming, didn't go too hard in training camp is to preserve LeBron for sure, although he looks spry in many moments of the game, not on defense, but on offense.
Yeah.
Is because AD is injury prone. And they were like, you know, let's kind of gauge our way. And we know 82 games, he'll get in shape by like game 10 or whatever the number
is. And the load management war that the league has decided to wage against the NBA. So, yes, you're right.
So do you think that because Miami goes so hard in training camp that it has its negative returns early in the season, but around the All-Star break and after, they're fine. They're good to go. That's when you're like, oh, look at Miami coming out of nowhere.
I do think that's a very good thing, although Jimmy didn't do him anything. He's been out for a while. But yeah, it absolutely could be the case. I also think they're going to play a good amount of guys and try to figure some stuff out.
Jaime Jaquez Jr.
It's definitely a problem. Yeah, he looked good. It's a problem in college where guys I could just see it watching some early season games when I do watch it, that their legs are a little dead and you just know they've gone through hell. And then once the season starts, they tend to kind of slow that thing down a little bit.
Yeah. You know, I was talking to Henry, but you mentioned the war on load management. And there's a doctor, Dr. Joyner, who is at the Mayo Clinic, like world-renowned physiologist, published in a gajillion articles, ESPN. Henry's interviewed him a bunch. Tom Habershaw's interviewed him a bunch. And he talks about, you know, if he was a czar of the NBA, you know, you're looking at a bunch of factors that cause fatigue, right? And it's, you know, sleep, it's length of season, all these various things. And the loads, right, on the body. And he said, if it was up to me and I was NBA czar, no more than 5 loads over any 2-week period, right? So that's over 14 days. And I'm like, yeah, this is what we've been saying, right? Like, that makes sense. And we know in the NBA, you're doing probably 6 to 7 loads over a 14-day period. Sometimes
8, yes. Yeah, but it's really, that's not that much difference. My point is this, when I say that. The science is the science. If it's 5, it's 5. Mm-hmm. So if you're at 7 on average, so cut it down to 5.
I agree.
You know, just, it shouldn't, it's not. Yeah, so 5 would be 1 midweek game over 2 weeks, mm-hmm. 2 midweek games a month. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, play your weekends, whatever. You could make it happen.
Of course you could make it happen. We know this, David.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw this clip that went viral from the game. So it was during a timeout in the third quarter, I want to say. So among the time when the Lakers were...
Was this LeBron, D'Angelo Russell?
Yes. And as you mentioned, the Lakers were in this game, even though they ended up losing in the end.
They cut it to three in the second half. I think three once, maybe five once, and Denver just made a tough shot and got the lead bigger.
And D'Lo said, you know, we got to get it going in the pick and roll. And LeBron's like, not just the pick and roll. Like, also when you get to the elbow, because if you give it to me at the elbow, I see everything. And I'm like, that's when my eyes was like, yeah, what do you see, LeBron, when you're at the elbow? And it reminded me of Jokic, right? Operating at the elbow. That's just those super brain process guys, they can – I got it. This is a great spot for me.
And when you're in the – that's so think of the court being cut three ways. So imagine I'm on one free throw line. Mm-hmm. Imagine I have long arms. I'm Victor Wembanyama. So I can reach each free throw line and paint it up the court. So now I've got three long, thin rectangles. You have the middle third and then the flanks on the side, right? Mm-hmm. Well, if you're in the middle third, which is the elbow pretty much is on either side – everything is one pass away, and the rim is one dribble away, and a quick pass, right? I can do a quick touch pass there. I can find any three-point shooter anywhere. I literally sent that clip of LeBron to a player of mine who's the best player on his team because I want him to get more elbow touches. And this is – it's not just me saying – LeBron's saying the same thing. But D'Lo, I forget exactly what he said, but when LeBron was first saying it, D'Lo's answer was something about how the rim's so close. That's one reason why, too. Meaning help can't get there in time. If LeBron decides to locomotive to the rim, you can't bring help in time. You can't from the three-point line, though. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so this is where – this isn't rocket science. When I was a high school coach in the summertime when I used to coach camps all summer, I was always – I used to back screen, ball screen, or back screen, cross screen to get the ball to my best athlete in the middle of the court, right at the nail or so. Mm-hmm. He couldn't shoot threes. So this one player in particular I did a lot for. He would back screen for someone. So you have to worry about the lob. Mm-hmm. And then I sent a cross screen for him with the guy that could really shoot whatever. But I really want to get the ball to my best player's hands in the middle of the court.
Yep.
Everything's one pass away and the rim is one dribble away. Yes.
And then literally the next play, right after that, they run an action, pick and roll. And LeBron's at the elbow. Instead of giving it to LeBron, like we did, they just talked about, D'Lo decides, I'm going to take a step back three instead. Bad idea. Of course, he didn't make it.
I didn't know if it was a step back or not. I had a little different opinion, Gerard. First of all, I looked at LeBron. I really am proud of LeBron. No reaction.
He didn't. He wasn't like, oh, what's this guy doing? Yeah,
and I promise you, I started even games last night. Game one, I saw a couple of guys with their hand on their knees. Like, oh, man, is he going to shoot it? Like, oh. Come on. Already there's some probably shots one of those teams after having the players only meeting already. So LeBron didn't do that.
He didn't.
My attitude is, D'Angelo Russell is the sneakiest best offensive player in the league the last 5 years that no one knows about. Right. When I say best, I mean in that elite. Right. Have you looked at what his EPM was, for example?
Yeah, he's very good offensive.
Pretty good.
Very good.
So he has his flaws. Mm-hmm.
And he didn't shoot well Tuesday night in that game. Tuesday.
No. Yeah, you could criticize that shot if you want. I didn't care so much that LeBron was saying, you got to get to me next possession. If he had said, get it to me next possession, I'd have been a little more pissed.
Right.
But it is something to watch as the Lakers play on. Are they execute? Because I think Darvin Ham's not doing a great job still.
No.
I still don't like their identity. I don't know why. They decided to change the Frank Vogel system where we had AD at the four. All the other guys they played at the five pretty much out of the league or barely playing. It's just been a couple of years. Mm-hmm. Let's pulverize teams in the paint.
Yeah.
Instead, they're going AD at the five, and they're just not big. They're not powerful.
Yeah.
I don't know what their identity is. They're loaded with talent. Austin Reeves was not good.
He was not.
He will be good. He is a great player. Hachimura is a disappointment. We'll see how things go with them. Gabe Vincent's got to figure out his new role. This ain't Miami, Gabe. This is not a well-scripted situation. This is not a franchise that everyone really respects in terms of how they process through stuff. And so you're on your own now, buddy. Figure it out.
Because
I don't think they're going to figure it out for you. That's my assessment anyway.
No, I think you're right there. I also, you know, I think Denver, I mean, Denver's a bad matchup for a lot of people. Let's just call it what it is. But I think uniquely this Lakers team, they just present a lot of problems that, because like every great player presents problems to everybody, right? The question is, how many of those can I solve? And it seems like the Lakers have less of them than they can solve for whatever reason. Maybe it works out over time. We'll see. I want to go back to your point about the nail, right? And or the elbow, excuse me, and being in the middle of the floor.
Yeah.
Because you also said in our Substack chat, you'd love to see the processing speed and tested of Nikola Jokic and Tom Brady, right? These elite guys, Chris Paul, LeBron, whoever you want to say. Because they have such amazing pattern recognition, because of the repetitions, these guys are in their late 30s. So they've seen a billion things in the NBA over and over and over again. They know it all. So the ability to be at the best place where everything is one pass away, and I know I have a reference point for everything, that's what makes that spot so dangerous for them, right? Because it's just like, I know, you're coming from here, I know exactly where the open man is, and if we have continuity as a team, I know where my guy is going to cut into or move into to get an open or easy shot. It's a beautiful thing to watch.
It's not just about knowing who's going to be open, although that does help a lot. Because how do you know if you don't know what the defense is going to do, which you don't always know that. So if you watch the game with me, for example, I would pause it when Jokic does his three reads in the blink of an eye. Like Brady in quarterback, and I played the position I did play, here's your check down. Everyone knows the check downs. Here's the first guy I went and reading from there, bounce down. You have to do it fast in football. You have to do it faster in basketball. It's just a shorter space.
Brady's pre-snap before anybody's moving, whereas Jokic's got to do it while people are moving.
Correct. Exactly right. So Jokic will have the ball, and you could see it check 1, 2, 3. He's checking his first one. Oh, that's covered. Second one, okay, that means third one's going to be there. He can just throw it. Yeah. He's amazing at it. LeBron's amazing at it. Chris Paul is amazing at it, right?
So good.
These guys just – because it's not just knowing ahead of time. You're really playing three-dimensional chess. You're really playing I don't play chess at that level, but I'm sure there are chaos creators as chess players. You're not going to get the read on me. You have to read me as I'm doing it live, and that's the way the game is played.
Yeah, no, it's. I mean, there's so much involved in the game, and it's so beautiful to watch. So, so beautiful. The second game, Suns, Warriors. The Suns turned the ball over a ton in that game. KD did not shoot well. Suns still won. Curry was in foul trouble in that game. You know what stuck out to me, David? One, I mean, this is something we always know on the Warriors side. When Draymond doesn't play, they really miss him. That's an obvious, and everybody knows that. And not just defensively, on offense as well. People are like, why? Draymond doesn't score. It's not about him scoring. It's just how he initiates everything, gets things moving, screens, all the things that he does for them is so wonderful. And that continuity of Steph, Clay, Draymond, it's missing one of their guys, right? So it's not functioning in that perfect manner that it does. On the Sun side, I mean, this is no surprise. All NBA first team 2 years ago. Devin Booker is so good. Like he really is good. And I think, and this is coming from a KD lover, I think Book is the number one guy on that team. And that's fine. I think that's actually good. He's 27.
I'm telling KD that.
That's okay. I think it's fine because let's rest those 35-year-old ligaments and let Book be the guy because we're going to need you. If we want to win, you are going to have to be good in April, May, and June. So let the young guy do his thing. Book was just phenomenal on both ends, I thought, on Tuesday night.
I didn't watch the game so closely. I got caught up with all the games last night, so I didn't really go back to it much. But I mean, I saw enough. And Beal didn't play.
And Beal didn't play. Yep.
And the other takeaway I had is Wiggins didn't finish the game.
No.
For Golden State. And Kerr kind of took a shot at him.
Oh, and post-game, what did he say? I didn't see it.
It's mainly I forget exactly, but it was more of just he went with the guys that were defending. And nice. I think I'm right when I say that. And Kuminga played well.
He did. Yikes. Yeah. That's not good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. You're right about Draymond being needed. Yeah. And Looney looks heavier to me. I'm disappointed to say that. And I'm a big fan. He's got to be better. But Phoenix is going to be – those are my two favorites to win the West regular season right there. But not if Wiggins doesn't play well and Looney's heavy. Phoenix is going to be dynamite offensively when Beal's back. Dynamite.
I think so too.
Yeah, they're going to be really good. And I like Frank Vogel a lot.
And they had, yes, the Warriors had a 40-point third quarter because, you know, shit like that happens. But the Suns had
always.
Right. That's, you know, the Suns had two quarters, the second and the fourth, where they held the Warriors under 20 points. The Warriors scored less than 20 points twice in a basketball game. Look, that's if their offense is elite, which we know it will be when all three of them are playing, if they're playing Denver Nuggets level defense from last season, they're going to be pretty good and pretty tough to beat, the Phoenix Suns. So that'll be interesting to watch going forward. And, you know, I think the turnovers. Oh, I have to mention this. Josh Okogie was incredible in that game. Just all the things that, like, you know, that don't make SportsCenter highlights, right? Like all the rebounding, tip balls, getting drawing fouls on Steph Curry, like breaking up the timing of all the things that no one recognizes. They kind of like, oh, dead ball, whatever. Because someone in that team's got to do it. It ain't going to be those three big guys. So someone else has got to be a disruptor, a willing defender, diving on the floor for all that. Someone has to do it. And I thought Okogie was excellent. I think he had the highest plus minus in the game, if I'm not mistaken, from the team.
Yeah, you know, I don't care about plus minus in any one game. It doesn't necessarily mean it's not accurate. It just doesn't also necessarily mean it is accurate. Here's my issue with Okogie. We talked about this going back to last year. Who's going to guard him in the playoffs?
That's correct. The Warriors did not at the end of that game, and he hit a three and made him pay.
Yeah.
If he does that consistently.
Correct. That changes a lot, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like everyone. You got to have players that are going to be guarded.
Yep.
And so they can't just hide out. And so, yeah. He's good, athletic, and does a lot of little things. Phoenix is, like, if they win the West, it wouldn't surprise me one bit. I think I had him second.
They do, as you've mentioned before, they have a Nurk problem, which I agree with you 100% on.
He looked good, though.
He was good. He 13, 14 rebounds. But
make threes and rebound will help, yeah.
Yeah. And when they go small and put KD at the five in the playoffs, which they will, I'm sure, a number of times, that'll kind of make things a little bit different for that team. But anyway, that was a fun game. David, I was in Brooklyn last night. Nets, Cavaliers.
Great game.
What a great game.
Best game of the day, I thought.
Yes, best game of the night last night. Here's my takeaway. Cam Thomas can still score. That's a thing.
What, you have 36?
Yep, he's still pretty good. And efficiently, too. Yeah, he's still very good at scoring.
My takeaway was a little bit different, although that's impressive. Isaac Okoro is coming.
He was good. And I'm like,
he was not a bad shooter last year.
Right.
They played fast. He had a lot of race outs, shot well. Jared Allen didn't play.
He did not. But JB ahead of the game was talking about, who's playing? He's like, I don't know yet. You know, coaches did the thing. And we're like, coach, the game tips in like,
when is he back? What's wrong with him?
It's a foot thing. And they want to get him a practice in since no one ever practices. It's going to be a little bit of time before they get him back. Oh, the second thing my other observation from that game is Evan Mobley too toolsy. And what I mean by too toolsy is when you're talented and can do lots of things, I feel like sometimes that can overload your brain and you then don't become good at any really elite at any one thing.
Call that the Lamar Odom problem.
Okay.
I mean that. Yeah. Because that's who he is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like all MVP level talent.
Because I see it. I'm like, oh my God, this guy can do it. But I'm like, but why are you not making an impact on this game? Like, what is not happening here? I don't know why. And then maybe it's because too much, he can do too much. Like, can you just play elite defense and that's it and not worry about anything else right now? And it's just comes and goes, you know? It's very strange. Very strange.
It's why I talked about using Victor as a Duncan Robinson kind of player. Mm-hmm. And not as a KD guy. It takes a while to learn how to you said it right. You want to learn how to win possessions, and then you can increase your thing. When you may have heard me say this before. I may have even written about this in my book. When you pack for a vacation, you don't pack that which you covet when you saw it in the store. Mm-hmm. When I first wrote the book, there were catalogs. Mm-hmm. No one uses catalogs too much anymore, a little bit.
You pack what you own.
You pack what you own. Mm-hmm. You have to own it. Can't just covet it. And so I think there's a process to this. And I think of yourself as an adult, and I've done this speech a lot to young players. You don't start out wearing the fancy clothes, the expensive clothes.
Work to that.
You do the basics, right. It takes some time. Build your wardrobe out, and then you can splurge. Evan needs to do that. Yeah. he's got a lot of gifts.
Yeah.
But a lot of these guys, the biggest problem with NBA players is most of them are out there hooping. There's not a lot of planning, strategic thinking. How do I impact these possessions? The best coaches make them do that. The best coaches force them to think about how can I best impact this possession? If I have a player that's 6'10", agile, can dribble, can shoot, got some strength, and can play every position on the court pretty much, I'll remind them the best thing you can ever do is knock someone's ass down under the rim, catch the ball, and go dunk it. You've never dribbled. It took you 1 second, mm-hmm. not even that.
Yeah.
Make them defend that mm-hmm. every chance you get. And I gave this one player that's similar to that an example of every time you go under a Damian Lillard ball screen, he's shooting the three every time.
Every now.
So every time a big cat doesn't just pummel a guard or a wing under the rim, ceiling, screening, ceiling, whatever, they've let them off the hook. Just like Dame would let someone off the hook by going under a screen mm-hmm. when he's in range. There's a mindset to that. So Mobley has a number of areas where he could be elite at. Mm-hmm. He should be absolutely trying to hammer those every time. And then the other stuff will come. And I just don't – he probably isn't doing that. I tell you who is getting better at that is Scotty Barnes. Same class. My two favorite players in the class. Mm-hmm. It's starting to come for Scotty a little bit. Mm-hmm. And the part of it is because Darko's giving him the ball.
Yeah.
The ball's in his hands more. But he's a big, powerful guy. And that's really going to help him a lot.
Yeah. No, I love that. Love your breakdown on that. All right, guys. We'll be back after a brief commercial break. Stay tuned. This episode of True Hoop is brought to you by BetterHelp. Hey, guys. Gerard Hector from True Hoop here. You ever have a situation where a friend, a partner, or spouse does something and you sweep it under the rug like, no big deal. And then something else happens and you don't mention it because you don't want to make waves or ruffle feathers. But what happens is we end up holding on to these things and they become stressors. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. And when we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. I've been open about this in the past, and you guys know I see a personal therapist as well as a couples therapist for my partner and I. And both are helpful for developing positive coping skills and knowing how and when to set boundaries. Therapy empowers you to be the very best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/drewhoop today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/drewhoop. All right, moving on. Wemby time. David, Wemby had some foul trouble yesterday.
Yeah, I watched.
And, you know, that's going to happen to young players and players in the league. It's, you know, it's basketball. Shit happens. And I put in the doc, Wembanyama foul trouble and spurt ability. Shout out to Clark Kellogg of college basketball fame. It's one of his favorite phrases.
I remember.
Spurt ability. And why I said spurt ability is pretty obvious was that fourth quarter sequence where I was like, Jesus, all of a sudden you went from 6 points non-factor in the game to shit, he's up to 15 and now the Spurs are up by three. I was like, whoa, what happened? And the way he moves and his fluidity, all the gifts he has, again, a toolsy guy, right? Incredible. I know Pop is not going to let him pack that which he covets. He's going to be like, no. You're good at these things. Let's start with what you're good at. As you say, they don't run a ton of stuff for him ever. They did run a couple things for him in the fourth, Pop did say, and that's what led to those points. I thought post-game there was some really interesting quotes. This is from Pop. One of the toughest things for a player to is to get into foul trouble. You never get into rhythm and you're in and out of the game and that sort of thing. I thought his maturity showed, even at a young age, where he came in with the last 7 minutes and just played. We ran some stuff for him. He executed where a lot of guys would have been totally out of it because they were in foul trouble. They didn't get any rhythm. I thought he had a wonderful outing considering that. And then something Victor said about what, because someone asked him in the post-game presser, were you frustrated with the foul calls? And you know, there seemed like it'd be a couple times where you were open in the post in the first quarter, especially, and your teammates didn't get you the ball. They missed you. He's like, well, that's frustrated or not. Like, I can't go to the bench and hang my head. I got to be up and be positive for my teammates. I know you love that kind of thing. Now, it's only game one of 82. We'll see how over the years what happens. But I just love that mindset from him. Like, yeah, you know, things happen in a basketball game. but he didn't let it bother him in that fourth quarter. He came back in, they ran stuff. He did what he had to do, got a block late, like just some really cool stuff. And I was like, all right, young man. I mean, it's not surprising because everything we've read and heard about him is that that's who he is. I hope that continues and it, you know, takes him his whole career.
So I'm not a betting man, but I would put my entire fortune on the line on the idea of the bet of whether or not he's played with someone before that didn't throw him the ball when he was open in the post.
Happens all the time to big men, yeah?
Every big man knows that story because guards are stupid or whatever.
Guards are stupid. Yeah,
he's seen it before, you know? What I always tell players is if the coach doesn't say anything ever, but now you got to speak up.
Right.
You're hoping the coach does something. I imagine Pop will at the right time. I think the Spurs are really – they're just trying to figure out not just Victor.
Themselves.
They're just – yeah, who are we going to be in the next 3 to 5 years? And let's start – there's some things that are foundational, good to great passes, care about defense, that kind of thing. They got to work on all that. I don't think they care about winning this year. I really don't. I don't think they'd mind it. Last year they minded it. This year, I don't think so.
Interesting.
They're experimenting Jeremy Sochan at the one. I think that's a mistake. I don't think it'll last long. But it's interesting to see, and it does mean you can't get away with some minutes of it and just be a huge team.
Yeah.
With Devin Vassell as a two, who played really well, I thought, last night.
Yeah, he did.
Victor's fouls were, he had one where he was just posting up, but his elbow is at Grant Williams' head. That's also something he's dealt with before. It's just not as frowned upon in Europe.
Right, right.
They don't mind that as much. He'll get used to that. Guys are getting into his body some. Referees also have to get used to
officiating him.
Yeah. So that's all going to come. That's why you can't care so much about winning if you're Pop, because your team's going to – it's going to take a year to figure Victor out. Not just themselves, but the referees too.
But – I like what you said. If you're Pop, not caring about winning. And it's different because Pop's been through it all, see it all. But you want Victor and the players to care about winning.
Oh, you play. You try to win every game possible. Yeah. You just recognize it's this is not – in the next 5 years, this will be our worst year. Like, that's almost a given, minus real tragic injury. So let's just try to figure stuff out. Henry likes to ask this. Who's going to be on the team when they're contending?
Well, so we know Victor team. Will be, and Devin Vassell. We know Victor's those two.
They just paid Devin, and he is he's young, perfect candidate to play with Victor. Not a guy that's selfish, and that's it.
That's it.
We have no idea who else might be on that team. Jeremy's got a shot because you can play a non-shooter. I think he made 2 of 4 threes yesterday.
Yeah.
I think that's right. He's not been a good shooter before. We'll see what happens this year. Game one was fine. But you can play a non-shooter at any position when you're big, shoots like Victor. That guy we think will shoot like Victor.
Yep.
He wasn't a good shooter last year. But yeah, they're in a good spot. But Dallas, do you want to get to Derek now or do you want to wait?
Wait 1 second, because I do want to say, because you mentioned Vassell, and he and Victor are for sure going to be on the team when they
contend. I think so.
So this is Vassell post-game. We're all figuring each other out. We're all figuring out Wemby. He's figuring us out. We just got to figure out how to play as a team and make sure that the game is easy for him and he doesn't have to do too much as he has to do in an ISO situation. Just getting him easy lobs, easy looks at the rim to get him going. He demands so much attention. If they double team him, we have to be able to cut and make certain plays out of that. And I think that was just a right smart answer for him to say, right? He's so big and tall at 7'4". There are ways to get him easy. I mean, if he's around the rim, he's going to get easy putbacks and tip-ins because ain't nobody jumping up there with him because he's so big, right? And then if they run... like you said, the Duncan Robinson stuff, simple things for him, really easy. None of the KD stuff, because you don't own that yet. Little easy. I think they'll be just fine if they work and play off that. And if those two develop the right chemistry, because we know they are going to be the future of the team, that's a win. Then they're cooking with gas.
I really love that. I've heard great things about Victor. I know Devin's an amazing guy. I've heard great things about Victor, too. One of his agents is a friend of mine and just says the best. I know some guys that have played with Victor. They're just a really great guy. The figuring out thing, you've said like 3 times. I had a player tell me recently he's on the second unit, and they lost in practice to the first unit. The first unit had 2 old, but very, very good players, accomplished players. And my player was frustrated, and the 2 veterans said, you don't understand. Like, 2 of us are 2 of the smartest dudes on the planet when it comes to basketball, and you're playing with young, athletic guys who don't know what they're doing.
Right.
You're good enough to play with us as a starting player. And you would have been privileged to play with us smart guys mm-hmm. that know how to win. That's the what the average fan doesn't know. Everything's about machismo and jumping and dunking. It's all just figure it out, which right. is exactly when you go to Evan Mobley, and I said Lamar Odom, those guys didn't – what Lamar never figured out mm-hmm. how to best dominate a game. Mm-hmm. He came closest when he was sixth man of the year for Phil and won a ring. That's what's up to the coaching now for Evan and then the Spurs and Victor is figure stuff out. How do we best take advantage? It's what the coaches should do, but players have to do it too.
Yeah, 100%. All right, Derek Lively. So let's start with him in that game. Well, here's a question. Does Derek Lively have a chance?
Yes.
What am I going to say? What's the question I'm going
to
ask you?
To be the starter for them, for Luka.
No. I was going to ask if he has the chance not to – to be the most impactful rookie this year.
Yeah, I asked that question to Donovan, right. Yeah. God, that I don't know. I was just comparing it to Victor and Wendy.
And Chet. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry, to Victor and Chet. Mm-hmm. It's a fair question because neither of those guys have Luka.
Right.
It's amazing.
Right.
And had 10 assists yesterday, which is so not easy to do. Yeah. Of all the players that had double-figure assists in their first game, all but one are max players or have been max players because Westbrook had 13. He was terrific last night.
He was.
And he's been obviously a high max player. I don't know. Derek is he's got a real simple game. I wrote that he could be like this year's Walker Kessler, Walker was older.
I like it.
Just protect the rim and dunk the ball. Thank you. Thank you. Just do that.
You just said pack only what you own.
Yep.
He seems
to keep it simple.
He just does that, right? That's it.
Super springy, bouncy dude. Has very good hands up in the air. I don't know about his hands on the ground yet, but everything's in the air. He's catching. And I think I told you on the show, I've heard he's dunking everything in practice. From Luka. And Luka threw a great lob to him, like an overhand 40-foot lob that he dunked. Yeah, I think he had 20 points in the game and double-figure rebounds.
Listen.
Finished the game.
Luka was talking to Cassidy Hubbard after the game, and Cassidy asked him about Derek Lively. He was just like, before my first game as a rookie, I had nerves, whatever. Derek didn't seem to have any. He's like, this guy's amazing. I was like, ooh.
Wow.
If Luka's giving them that kind of props, now. I don't know what that means because remember we talked about this early when we found out that he was probably going to start. Well, is this because they're potentially having him as trade, whatever? Who knows? Look, now they got to be like, no, this is a good thing. We got to keep
it. I thought this a couple weeks ago because a month ago I thought trade bait. But 2 weeks ago I started thinking, no, they're just trying to show Luka what's next. So here's one guy. Mm-hmm. We don't know about Jaden Hardy yet because he's hurt. Omax Prosper, we don't know because he is a rookie and didn't play.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a feeling the Dallas people are thinking, we want Luka to see this is the team we're going to have. Athletic guys that have skill, that play super hard, that love the game. And that's going to be our way to keep him. And so Derek looks like he's filled that bill. Rashard Holmes didn't play. And I thought he might be able to find himself. Well, maybe not. It might be the Derek Lively show.
Lively finished with 16 points, 10 rebounds.
16, okay.
Again, I know I agree with you. I don't judge single game plus minus, but team high plus 20.
Listen, you can add all the numbers together. Mm-hmm. If it was an efficient 16 and 10 rebounds and plus 20 something, well, the indication of the team was doing pretty good when he's on there.
Correct.
But the guy that's minus 5, but performed well. It's not his fault, probably.
Right.
That's all I'm ever saying.
Yeah.
Derek was huge for them last night. And Western Conference fans of other teams, there's a little reason to be like, oh, fuck. Luka's not going to leave. You want is a guy like that to jump to 12 feet and rim protect. And he's got one.
And again, because he's a rookie, two, because he doesn't have that in his game, he's not going to be someone asking for the ball. You rim run, we'll throw it up and get it to you, you know?
And he was the number one player in his class, so he's used to having some success and having some swagger. And then went to Duke. Now, he only averaged 5 points a game at Duke.
But still.
But they didn't have Luka on their team.
Correct.
They had Luka on their team, and he scored a lot more.
I also wrote this on the doc. David, Luka's still a killer. It was pretty awesome last night. I was like,
yeah, you're really going on a limb with stuff like that. he's amazing.
I was like, what is this guy doing? This is game one. Why is he?
He's just, everything is slow motion. Yes,
I'm watching. I'm like,
yeah, just and kill you.
I can see it, David. They're trying to force him to speed up. He won't do it.
They've been trying to speed up since he was 12.
It's like nope. This is the pace we're moving. I'm like, this is incredible because he's so big and physical. So yeah, you can't take it from him. You can't push him off the spot.
And skilled.
You know, this guy's amazing. And you know, the Kyrie symmetry thing seems to be getting some legs. They're getting, you know, a little better. Off ball, he's working well.
I'm gonna hold off on that till they beat a team, not the Spurs.
Well, yes,
no Spurs, but there's just the Spurs.
Right, they're
but,
not good
yet. But yeah, last night was fine. Kyrie's never been the ball hog.
No, he's not.
That's not his problem.
Right.
He might flake out for 3 weeks and pull a Dennis Rodman and go to Vegas or something.
Right.
But yeah, he's not a ball hog at all.
Okay. Should I be worried, David, about the Memphis Grizzlies offense?
Nope.
Okay, good.
One game. No, call me in a week.
If they're doing the same thing in a week, then...
people can have bad games.
So is that what you thought it was, just bad shooting game? Because I'm like, I just don't... First of all, I've never been a fan of the Marcus Smart early in the shot clock pull-up threes, even when he wasn't on my team. And I was like...
You're not alone in that.
I was like, what are you doing? Why? And Desmond Bane looked great. I was really high on him. I was not high on Jaren's offensive game. And I was like, this, you know, but one game.
No, Steven Adams matters.
Yes.
And Zion matters. Yeah. Brandon Ingram matters. And Valanciunas matters. New Orleans is good.
They're very good.
Yeah. I had them, I think, win 42 games this year.
Yeah. No, they were good. You want to, just as we finish up talking about the games, just more superlatives on Shea and his game last night. Like someone texted me like, dude, you watching this Bulls game? I'm like, I'm at a game. I got another game on my screen. Like, I can't watch three games at once.
I did not watch it. I know he played really well.
So well.
Yeah, he's going to make a run for MVP.
Well, as I said in my Bull, he did finish top five last year. Again, they are the one team that has the things you need to get a disgruntled superstar. I'm not saying anything, but.
Nope. Right.
There's only one we know of. There might be more.
They can get a lot for sure. Our editor Travis wrote an article about his fantasy team yesterday, and that was his first pick, and I gave him an A for it. Good job.
He's an excellent player. He's another one, David, that can't speed him up either. He just operates at his pace.
Well, he's already going super fast a lot, but yeah,
it's just
all the best players can't beat. This is something you look at in high school, is the guys that just play. Mm. When teams were recruiting my son, one thing they liked is we played super fast, unless we weren't supposed to play real fast, and he just knew how to play. That's always what you want your guards to be able to do. Shea's got another gear offensively, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But 10 assists is not something he did a lot of in his career.
No.
That's a big deal.
That's huge. Yeah, no, it's...
Yeah.
OKC is for sure a fun team to watch. Definitely a top league pass team. There was a clip that floated around, David, from Gilbert Arenas on his podcast, and he talked about media members and the changing criteria they use in Gilbert's opinion of protecting the game, but it minimizes current players or certain players that, and Gilbert sees it as something sort of like intentional by the media, whereas if they want to push one guy forward, they're going to change the criteria that supports him. And it negates players of the past. And I don't generally agree with what he's saying, although he did say that, you know, if a guy's good in his era, you have to give him props for his era. And that part I do agree with. And this is something you and I have talked about. We have to stop comparing players across eras because, one, comparison's thief of joy. Two, you're not comparing like to like. Like, just because Bill Russell was a center doesn't mean you should compare him to Nikola Jokic. Like, they were playing two different games of basketball in two different, completely different eras. So my whole thing about this is you can talk about an era and define it, you know, however it is, the 2010s, the O's, whatever, and you just compare who played when the game was roughly the same and who were the guys in that era. And when you want to talk about overall and all time, you can do an accomplishment list, right? Which is something totally different. And that's fine. If you want to say, oh, look at this guy, he had 18 All-NBA, that's incredible, like LeBron, yeah. That puts him up there with Kareem and everybody else who's had that many All-NBAs. But when you want to compare them player for player, you can't because the games are just so different.
Yeah, I like – there's nothing to add to that other than I like Gilbert's mind is really interesting. Mm-hmm. I like him making his thing of himself like that. The media is not doing anything as a homogeneous unit.
Right.
You know, we all, homogeneous unit, we mm-hmm. all do it ourselves. Mm-hmm. The kiss the game is, it's just no comparison.
There isn't.
Everything is so different than it used to be. And I don't think I don't love it when people media as if we're a bunch of,
right.
A monolithic creature.
Right. We are certainly not, just like the players aren't. Close. You know, and part of it too, David, is the older players have to stop doing that thing where they go, well, if they played in my day, we just knock them on his ass. And it's like, guys, right. just stop saying that stupid shit. Like, because right. that's combat sports. We're playing basketball. We're not playing right. MMA. This is not.
These guys, what they put their bodies through is not quite the same as what you did because they're not getting punched in the face.
right.
But it's still really hard all the time. They're not. These guys are not.
But soft. Getting punched in the face is not basketball. That's boxing. If right. you want to punch people right. in the face, go do that.
Right. but most of these players grew up in areas where they've been in fights before.
For sure.
We all play pickup basketball.
Fights happen all the time in pickup basketball.
Yeah. These guys are not soft.
no.
They would not be soft at all.
Definitely not soft. So Rick Carlisle had some interesting quotes about a favorite player of yours, TJ McConnell. Before we get into that, Rick Carlisle just got extended by the Indiana Pacers.
Yeah.
So he'll be there through this rebuild very clearly. And you thought that the way Carlisle communicated his feelings about McConnell not getting playing time is coaching, right? Is having difficult conversations, but being able to communicate it well in a way that the player still is professional, does what they have to do. And let's be clear, there are players who will still be professional anyway if their coach is bad, because that's just how they are. But as a coach, communication is one of your, I mean, if you're bad at that, you're probably not a very good coach.
And a lot of them are bad. It's not that I thought what you just said, it's what Rick said. Rick said coaching is just making a bunch of hard-ass decisions. The problem is, we bring this up for two reasons. One, it's just a cool thing. Mm-hmm. TJ had a career year last year, mm-hmm. for like 40% from three or something like that. He's never a good shooter. He's not a novelty act. He's not just a little white dude. He's really good. And he's pesky on defense. Mm-hmm. And last year had this great shooting year and had a great preseason. Helped that Andrew Nembhard, their backup one and starting two last year, was out with a health issue and only played his last preseason game. And so what Rick said after the game, when Andrew came in like 6 minutes ago in the first mm-hmm. quarter, after one practice and one preseason game, had 8-7 at halftime.
Yep, you're looking good.
Finished with 12-10. And then after the game, Rick said, it's one of the hardest conversations he's ever had. He said I was almost brought to tears. TJ McConnell deserves to play. He's good enough to play. But I've got this burgeoning star that we drafted in the second round. And my best player on the team is a point guard. Like, I can't have three.
Right.
Something's got to give. It's TJ for now. And the fact that TJ, he's a big, this is Rick talking, huge fan of Nembhard. He said he's one of the most iconic Indiana players, what Rick said about TJ. And he took it professionally. And then the other interesting thing to say this before we talk about where TJ might go one day is Rick said teams really need him. But we do too. And at the end of the day, we have to do what's best for the team. And then, I'm listening to this thinking, that's not what his agent's thinking.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And then he said that. He said, I'm sure his agent doesn't agree with that. and so at some point, sorry, Rick, you can't just sit on this asset.
Right.
Because he's a human being.
Yeah, he's going
to
get moved.
And he wants to play. Mm-hmm. And there are teams that really need him.
Sure do.
Who? I don't know. Phoenix.
Yeah.
Philadelphia.
Yep.
You know, Miami.
Yep.
There's some good team that Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
That can contend.
Exactly what I was thinking of.
Yeah, so that's good for Indiana. You're going to get something.
Yeah, for sure.
You're going to get an expiring deal or a young player that's not working out so well, and like a Cam Reddish and the Lakers kind of thing, mm-hmm. Who looked good. I thought the other day looked okay.
Defensively. Yeah,
got a chance.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But this is, I like what Rick said about this is head coaching, making some hard-ass decisions. And then the communicating part, that isn't coming. In the NBA, a lot of these figure it out. You'll find out if you're in the rotation when we play. I don't love that, but that's the reality.
Terrible.
Of it. Yeah, yeah. That's the reality of it, though.
Can't talk to your guys? I mean, come on.
Yeah, a lot of them don't.
Did you see the Pacers last night? I mean, it's the Wizards. I know. They stink, but 143 points.
What are the Wizards doing? Tyus Jones is good. Kuzma is good. Jordan Poole, I'm not sure about. As a winner.
Right, right.
Daniel Gafford's good.
Yeah.
Danny Diaz, solid.
Yeah.
Guys, just Bilal, I think Koulibaly has scored 3 points. He's going to be really good. It's going to take some years.
Yeah.
Just be the next OKC, be the next Houston, be the next Utah. Trade all these guys.
You're right.
Let these – Tyus Jones needs to go – DeLon Wright's good. All these guys can help contenders. Let them go play for great teams.
I think that's you're, what you're I dead on, 100%.
Yeah.
Last thing before we go, James Harden came to work yesterday, David, and the 76ers said, okay, but you won't be flying with us to Milwaukee to play tonight. Why don't you stay back here and get yourself conditioned and all that because you're not quite ready. You've been away from the team for a while. There were some reports out there that his mother might have been ill, which is part of the reason why he's away. I don't know what's true, what's not. Look, all this is we're just waiting until the trade comes, right? This is all just waiting until the trade comes, which, you know, Daryl's waiting on getting exactly what he wants, and he usually does. That's usually his game. But again, as I said before, eventually constantly being asked about this is going to start wearing on Nurse and Embiid, and they're going to get pissed at some point and be like, stop asking about this shit. Let's get
this. Yeah. And then even if he does come back to play because he loves to play, they're still going to get the questions.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we'll see what happens with that. All right, guys, this weekend should be fun. We got games all weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday should be super exciting. Some good stuff. Early season trends, like David says, don't freak out. It's one game, one of 82. But if your team's still doing the same bad shit after a week, well, maybe start being like, okay, there might be something to be concerned about over there. All right, guys, take care.